Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, October 11th, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by Carbonite. Backing up the files on your PC or Mac is safe and easy with Carbonite. For a free trial plus 2 free months with purchase, go to Carbonite.com, offer code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we kick around the tech news of the day and try to do things with it, like explain it, say what it is, and move on to
it
the next
one. It is
malleable,
that tech news.
Yeah. You can make a pin or a brooch.
Yeah. Silly putty.
Yeah. Today's big news, of course, Windows Phone 7 at the ungodly hour of 6:30 a.m. Pacific, 9:30 Eastern time, and what, like 5:30 London time? They had their big Windows Phone 7 announcements.
So you were up early to cover this.
I was not.
Oh, you weren't?
I was asleep.
I thought you were with Leo.
No, Leo got up early.
Oh.
And I missed
it. I just assumed. You're usually so good about those sorts of things.
No, he let me off the hook, actually. It was very nice of him. Not much of a surprise. It was Leo and Paul this morning. Paul Thurrott from Windows Weekly talking about it. Officially launching October 21st in Europe and Asia. November 8th here in the United States. Windows Phone 7 will come with, as we expected, Xbox Live, some Zoom stuff. They'll also have, as in the U.S., as part of a deal with AT&T, bring you UVerse TV service to the phone. That's kind of cool. And they announced a bewildering array of different phones that will be available. In the United States, they focused on 3 phones. The HTC Surround, the LG Quantum, and the Samsung Focus.
The HTC Surround is interesting because it's the first, Dolby Digital surround sound with built-in speakers?
Yeah, and like, am I imagining this where they fold out speakers?
They're slide out.
Right. I wasn't imagining that.
If you're not using them, I mean, I haven't seen it in person, but yeah, they can kind of fold back or out, which I don't know. I guess if you're watching a movie alone in a room where you won't be bothering anyone else.
Yeah.
Because, or you're gathered around the phone.
Because that usually happens in a room without a television.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm wondering what all of the magical uses are for that that would make it come in handy to the point where you'd want those speakers all the time.
The Samsung Focus seems to be very similar to a Samsung Galaxy. But rather than being an Android phone, it's a Windows phone. And the LG Quantum, well, I don't know what to make of the LG Quantum. It's an LG phone. It's more of a business phone, it seems like. Slide-out QWERTY keyboard, Office Mobile on board.
Yeah, they're kind of...
Those are the AT&T phones, and those are the phones they focused on because AT&T is the premier partner. Only the Samsung Focus has an official release date of November 8th now. T-Mobile's also going to have a couple phones in the U.S., the HTC HD7 and the Dell Venue Pro. And actually, a lot of people think the Dell Venue Pro looks really nice.
The problem with these phones is already I'm confused.
There's a lot of them.
There's a lot of pros and sevens and H's and D's and I don't know.
The Dell Venue Pro is a QWERTY slider. Has a 800x480 pixel display, 1 gigahertz Snapdragon processor. Oh, pretty much all of them have a Snapdragon processor. 4.1-inch screen. So it's a nice big screen with a slide-out keyboard that's sort of Palm WebOS-like in that it slides...
upwards. Yeah.
Yeah, the screen slides up, and the keyboard's down below. Well, no, I say I'm Palm Pre-like, I should say, not WebOS.
It's like that modern Sidekick thing that no one's really been able to tackle correctly, but...
Everybody needs a sidekick.
Yeah. It's nice ergonomically.
And then after the first of the year, we're going to get our only CDMA phone from Sprint, the HTC 7 Pro. They say that's going to happen early next year. They haven't given a definitive date to that yet. That's just the U.S. Canada gets two. TELUS is going to have the HTC 7 Surround, which is different than the HTC Surround, and the LG Optimus 7. The LG Optimus is a phone that'll be available worldwide. UK is going to get, looks like, 5 different phones. O2 will have the HTC HD7. Orange has the HTC 7 Mozart and the Omnia 7 from Samsung. Vodafone gets the HTC 7 Trophy, which is actually similar to Sprint's HTC 7 Pro, except it's GSM, not CDMA. But this is what you're talking about.
Yeah,
it just starts to all
like
blend
together. It's like a
midterm
that's really hard to figure out. I mean, there's a difference between the HTC Surround 7 and the HTC Surround, but they're both running Windows Phone 7?
Yeah.
Come on.
It's,
how are you not going to be confused? I know that they're in different countries, but what is the deal?
Really? I mean, when I start to dig into it, it seems like most of the phones are the same worldwide. It's when you get to the U.S. that they suddenly like, well, but this one, it's not the same in the U.S. Mm. In the U.S., they tweaked it. And it's different in this way. So that's what's causing a lot of the confusion. We also got a nice little talk from Steve Ballmer introducing Windows Phone 7, in which he used terms like wonderfully mine. He used mine a lot. This is mine. This operating system is mine. Mine, mine, mine.
Well, it's his way of making sure that we understand how customizable it is. And
how delightful.
And delightfully mine.
Yeah.
Wonderfully mine.
Jobs had taken revolutionary, magical.
Right.
All that stuff.
Yeah.
So this
not
is what they're
revolutionary,
left with.
Not magical, but it is mine.
And delightful.
Delightfully
Don't
mine,
forget
in
that
fact.
It's delightful. It's delightful for everyone but the folks at Rovio. they got a little angry. They got their birds got a little angry this weekend.
Yeah, Rovio's the maker of Angry Birds, which is, as anyone knows who plays Angry Birds, an extremely addictive game, a real favorite in the app world, and was featured on mock-ups of a Windows Phone 7, you know, front screen or app screen.
Wait, yeah, it was a little promotional thing. And Rovio's like, what are you talking
Angry
about?
The Angry Bird logo was on it, and they went, no.
We're not. I mean, they said we are developing one for Windows Phone 7, but it's not. They didn't get our approval to use that.
Exactly. Which is funny because there was a time where as far as app developers go, you know, a software maker would be like, this is great. Look at us. Front and center. Windows Phone 7. And now Rovio's like, excuse me.
We talked about that on Twitter.
That is a copyrighted bird.
John Dvorak on This Week in Tech this week was pointing out, he's like, Microsoft's been doing this for years. He said there was a magazine launched at one point, and Microsoft came in with a bunch of ads, and the magazine was like, great, you know, here's our rate card. And they're like, no, you're going to run these for free because your magazine will look better with Microsoft ads in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the kind of attitude that has pervaded there for a while, where they're like, well, why would Rovio be upset? We gave him a bunch of free press.
Well, wasn't there a situation a while back where Microsoft wanted to pay a developer a certain amount of money? There was a certain app that was popular, and they wanted them to make it for Windows Phone 7. The developer said they didn't disclose how much money, but they said, not worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that's limited on Windows Phone 7. Not as many apps. They don't have cut and paste yet. They say that's coming. It's like first on their list to come in the early part of 2011, but no cut and paste to begin with. So it's they focused, but it's limited. I think it's a good operating system. I don't know how successful these are going to be at capturing first places. I think you're looking at a lot of second and third place phones.
Right. It just seems that the smartphone market is saturated. As far as the Android market, which has done so well, I mean, there are so many Android phones, and that's just not even counting the iPhone folks who are just going to be iPhone folks and aren't going to get Windows phones. I fall into that camp. But it's like they're not, I mean, they're so far from first that it'll be interesting to see who wants a Windows Phone 7.
One thing that was interesting,
Ina
Fried over at CNET got a little demonstration of what cut and paste is going to look like, and it'll work a little differently than it does, say, on an iPhone or an Android, because Windows Phone 7 can recognize whole words. So you just tap on a word, and it will highlight that word, and then you can stretch it.
Right.
It's not like you have to get in there and, you know, stretch it from one side to the other.
Doesn't that work on the iOS
sometimes.
Software?
It's not built to do that, but sometimes it will.
Sometimes it does, yeah.
Anyway, Windows Phone 7, it's launched. It's not here yet, but it's launched. You'll get it soon, Europe.
It does seem weird that they can give someone a preview of what cut and paste, copy and paste will look like, but it's still not ready to roll out.
Yeah, well,
I mean, how far away is it?
There's some bugs in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You think, like, oh, what's the big deal with that?
Yeah, just work around the clock a little more, a little Red Bull.
I mean, Google's out there having self-driving cars roll around on the street.
Is there anything Google can't do, Tom?
Yeah, but we haven't figured. We haven't. We can't prove it yet. There must be something they can't do. There's things that they haven't done. We don't know if they can't do it. Yeah, Google announced over the weekend they developed cars that drive themselves automatically in traffic. They've been tested on 140,000 miles of California road from Silicon Valley to Santa Monica. Each car is manned during the test. It's the only way that they're street legal. Is you have to have somebody sitting behind the wheel who can interfere and take over if there is a problem. They can either grab the wheel, touch the brake, or the person in the passenger seat is monitoring the software and can interfere that way. But they hired engineers who previously worked on Stanley, the DARPA Grand Challenge winner, and they say they rarely, if ever, have to interfere with these cars. Over 140,000 miles, I think they've only had to interfere seven times, if I remember that right.
The concept behind this is awesome because it's like, it's sort of a circular doohickey on the top of the car that's constantly spinning. And it's like, what is it, LIDAR? It's like a type of radar.
Right.
And so it can see things. First of all, it can see more things than we could see with our peripheral vision alone. But it's a computer, so it's not it doesn't have to account for me being distracted and maybe not seeing something out of the corner of my eye. It's sort of all seeing and all knowing. So in that sense, you go, well, that's really cool. But I just think of all of the weird human error issues that come up with driving all the time. Because you think that Google would say, okay, well, we're going to make a self-driving car so that someone like Sarah, when she's commuting to work, now sits comfortably watching her Google TV on her mobile phone.
Right.
And then maybe just looking up every once in a while. Well, that would require a lot of my trust in the system.
Yeah, a lot of confidence.
Yeah, a lot of confidence. And you know, think of a four-way stop where people, you know, you're both going at the same time, and you go, okay, sorry.
Yeah,
and you wave at each other, and you go again. It's like, it just seems like a recipe for disaster.
Well, the software that they developed lets you know when things might be needing your attention.
Yeah.
They say things like approaching crosswalk, turn ahead.
Mm.
So you can sort of look up, which means you're never going to be totally relaxed, right?
Because
you're always going to be like, oh, there's a turn ahead?
Man, sure.
Really? And they say that most of the times that they had to have the engineers step in were pretty rare things. It wasn't like four-way stop opportunities. It was more a couple times bicycles ran a stop sign or a red light. And so it was unexpected behavior.
Here's the if I had to think of what would be the worst scenario, let's say that there are self-driving cars on the road and then non-self-driving, because obviously we're not just all going to have self-driving cars like that. They would be rolled out slowly, if at all. And let's say that my self-driving car, I don't know, I'm just one of these, I don't know, road warriors, and I want to go faster than it wants to go and this and that. And I'm being negligent. And then I get into an accident and I blame the computer.
Well, that's the thing, right?
Even though I was the one who was actually in charge of the car.
It seems reasonable to say, well, you are at fault. Right?
Yeah.
But you could say, as the driver, the software let me down.
Right.
It didn't, you know, you can try to shift the blame onto the software.
I never got your voicemail.
Yeah.
I guess the phone's just not working.
Person backing into a space in front of me. How was I to know?
Computer went crazy. There must be some water in the system or something.
I do think, though, and studies have borne this out in most cases, that you end up saving a lot of lives and time when you have these automatic driving cars. But we like to think of the exceptional instances rather than the statistical norms.
Right.
And that's where the fear of this sort of thing comes from.
It would be a very different way of doing things, yeah. So, of course, you think of worst-case scenarios. But if anything can make traffic jams...
Yeah, you can
clear up a little faster.
They think they could double the capacity of the roads.
Yeah, you remember, I think it was a couple of years ago, someone posted online a way to get through traffic jams was to actually drive slower.
Right.
And, you know, it kind of goes against your way of thinking, which is I want to get there as fast as I can. But if everyone kind of pulls back and drives slower, then it allows for the more natural flow. So maybe something like this, the computer is making those types of corrections.
Right.
You don't have these like jam ups at exits because people are like, I don't want to let you over.
Right.
Everything just flows nicely.
Yeah, and it would cut down on all the people who have to merge, but they merge at the last possible second,
right.
You know, and they're
right.
The jerks that slow everybody else down.
Yep, exactly.
Not in my Google car.
And now
you will follow the rules.
Do you believe their optimistic projections of 8 years away from market at the least?
That seems pretty optimistic.
It seems pretty optimistic.
But
then
you know
again,
what 8 years ago in 2002 would we not have expected that we have now? Ability to watch video while walking around wirelessly, streaming to your phone. Not as dramatic as a self-driving car, I have to say. But.
Right.
2002. We were nearing the end of 2002, 8 years ago.
We were just starting moblogging.
Right.
At textamerica.com at that point.
Wow. Yeah, I don't even know how to answer that question. Yeah. It's hard.
All right. While you think of that, let's thank our sponsors, Carbonite. They'll keep your data safe for the next 8 years or more. They're the leader in online backup. And if you're worried about an unexpected crash on the highway, you should probably be worried about an unexpected computer disaster because that's more likely to happen. Some of the most common problems are hard drive failures, unintentional viruses. Well, when is a virus ever intentional? But you think, I'm not going to get a virus, then you get one. You risk losing important files on your computer if you don't back them up. I recommend backing up both locally and online. And for online, Carbonite is safe, easy, and automatic. You should totally put it in place. They help protect all the valuables on your computer, your photos, your video, your music, your Word and Excel documents. When you set it up, a lot of stuff is automatic, but you can tweak it to say, yeah, I do want those videos. I want those MP3s in there as well. And it's encrypted end-to-end. So before it leaves your computer, maximum security, easy to use. It's automatic, happens in the background. I don't even notice it. Other backup systems I've used, I've noticed they launch, they may gum up the works. Does not happen with Carbonite. I rarely even notice it's there. In fact, the one time that I had an outage, I got an email from Carbonite that let me know, hey, your last backup didn't complete. You might want to check it out. So you don't have to pay attention ever if you don't want to. They'll let you know if there's something you need to pay attention to. And you can also get your files back with just a few clicks, or even if there's not a disaster, you can get them on the road. You get web access to all the files that get backed up. So try it out for free for 15 days. If you want to pay for it, it's only $55 a year. That's 15 cents a day. Go to Carbonite.com, enter the offer code TNT, and if you do decide to buy the service, you'll get 2 months free with that offer code TNT. Be sure to sign up for the free trial from the homepage to get the 2 months free. No credit card required for the free trial, though. Try it for 15 days. Offer code TNT at Carbonite.com. Apple plans to offer the iPhone on Verizon.
What?
What? Shocking
Since
news.
When?
From the New York Times. They're New York Times now. What's funny
too,
about
huh?
this is they're like, well, the Wall Street Journal reported this, but now we have sources. So now more people have sources that say that Apple's going to bring the iPhone to Verizon. Steve Chaney over at TechCrunch today had a more interesting story, I thought, which is that there will be no 4G iPhone. That you will get an iPhone refresh in mid-2011. It will not support WiMAX or LTE specifically. Instead, it looks like Apple's producing a dual-mode phone that would contain GSM and CDMA in one baseband, meaning it could operate on all carriers worldwide. A lot of people are saying it'll be capable of doing data and voice at the same time on a CDMA chip. That's a different technology that would be put into here. And that you won't see Apple go LTE or 4G until 2012.
And I think a lot of folks might read this news or read into this news and go, really, Apple? No 4G? Come on. I mean, Android's on that bandwagon and you're never first.
And we're supposed to be in like 38 cities on Verizon, right? Come on.
But then Apple did this exact same thing with 3G.
Oh, yeah.
They were on their Edge network. They wanted 3G to work its own kinks out before they got on board. And I assume they're doing the same thing with LTE.
And I remember when they were on Edge that first year, everybody complained at how slow it was.
Oh, my gosh.
It probably wouldn't be the same here, though, because 3G, even though it's slower than 4G, is good enough, right?
Well, when
it
works.
Well, it's faster than Edge.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Well, what's funny is when the iPhone 3G first came out, Edge became faster for a while because everyone was on 3G suddenly.
I remember that.
And nobody was using Edge, so you didn't have the capacity issues. But they have bulked up the capacity. It's much better than it used to be. And I can't see Apple putting out a phone that wouldn't work as promised in 90% of the United States. They don't have 3G everywhere. So your iPhone doesn't work on 3G in every corner of the United States, but it works in almost every place.
Yeah,
they're going to wait.
Dakotas are the only ones off the map or something like that.
So they're going to wait until 4G is ubiquitous.
So if you're a 4G fan, I guess wait to get your new iPhone in 2012.
But you can still get in line to go to space, Spaceship 2, or It has been renamed the VSS Enterprise after the, for Virgin Spaceship. Successfully dropped off the White Knight 2 mothership from an altitude of 45,000 feet and glided to a landing at the Mojave Air and Spaceport. This is the next step in commercial spaceflight.
Now, they've got, what, 30 or something folks lined up to go into that
300.
First 300.
Yeah, more than 300.
And they're all paying a couple $100,000.
Oh, yeah. $200,000 a seat.
For a seat on the spaceship.
On the space plane.
On the VSS Enterprise. But they're only going 65 miles off of the Earth.
They're going weightless.
Yeah.
Essentially. I don't even know if they're making an orbit. I think it's suborbital.
Because we were looking some stuff up earlier, because it's like 65 miles.
Black.
How far is that? Well, it's not even halfway to the International Space Station.
No,
which is 220 miles.
Yeah. So
it's like far, but not really.
You get weightless, you get to see black out the window and see stars. But you're not.
You got a long way to go to get to the moon.
You're technically in space. I don't know if it's worth $200,000 for that ride that I'm going to vomit on.
However, it's farther than you've been able to go so far.
That's
commercially.
True.
Yeah, commercially.
Commercially.
Right.
That's
right.
True.
So
very
we'll
true.
Pay big dollars.
Anyway,
for that.
So if you remember it back in the late '70s when the Enterprise Space Shuttle Enterprise came off that jumbo jet and glided down and landed at Edwards Air Force Base. I think it landed at Edwards. That was the first test of the space shuttle. The next step was to launch an actual space shuttle into orbit. That's where they are with Spaceship Two or the VSS Enterprise. I guess it's named after the Space Shuttle Enterprise. That's kind of cool.
If money was no object, you'd both like a seat on the VSS Enterprise?
Absolutely.
If money was no object, yeah, sure. I'd vomit for that.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd save my pennies, $200,000. Yeah. Just to fly on this thing. That would take a long time,
you
first of all.
You guys.
But I would definitely do it.
I'm missing the chip. I don't even want to get into a Blue Angel for free.
You and Cooley.
Yeah. That's
don't
true.
Like the space.
No.
Yeah.
I want to hear all about it. Yeah. I'd love for you to take a picture, you know, send a note. But I don't want to be in that. Seeing black outside, that sounds like horrible.
Wouldn't you want to be weightless?
Oh, I can do that in Vegas somewhere. They put us in those weightless rooms with the air.
I can see black out the window in Star Trek The Experience. At the
right. Just turn out the lights in my hotel room and I'll see black.
I went skydiving. That was funny. That's as far as I need to get. I didn't even like that very much.
All right. Chevy apparently has been lying to us. Chevy says Volt's gas engine can power the wheels. Up till now, the big thing about the Chevy Volt, in fact, one of the reasons they got bailed out is because of innovative technologies like the Volt. And the big deal was that it was all electric. It had a gas engine merely to help recharge the electric engine. Well, Engadget has a posting today that says General Motors today let loose some interesting news that claimed that Chevy can, or the Volt can, actually power the wheels with the gas engine. Which really makes the Volt just a really powerful hybrid.
Because that's how hybrids work.
Yeah, hybrids work by a gas engine powering the car most of the time, and the electric engine kicks in another part of the time. The Volt kind of turns that on its head, apparently, and the electric engine powers the wheels most of the time, but the gas engine can directly provide powers to the wheels. So was Chevy lying this whole time?
Well, when I initially read the story, I thought, well, this makes sense because the Chevy, from sort of since day one, has been competing with the Nissan Leaf, which is the all-electric model. So you figure that they had to figure out a way to not just be another hybrid, to be something that's electric, so that people wouldn't go, well, Chevy, Nissan's the real electric vehicle here, and Chevy, you're just another hybrid. But the story is actually more interesting than that because Christopher Barger, who is the General Motors head of social media, links to this article from thecarconnection.com, which basically says the Chevy Volt is not lying about anything. I mean, what they have that the Nissan Leaf or no other car has is a generator inside the car that helps recharge the battery, so you're not as... it's not as important to have chargers along the way. And if it's fully charged, it can go 40 miles completely electric. And when that runs out, then you've got a generator to charge your battery. And you would need to use gasoline to be able to make that generator go. Mm-hmm. Or the gasoline goes straight to the to the wheels. It's like you need that gasoline either way, mm-hmm. and you're getting something extra. Plus, you're getting your electric car.
Because it's an electric car most of the time is what they're trying to
claim. Yeah, it's an electric car in the way that it's designed to be used, and you're just not going to run out of steam. I mean, you've got something better than what you want. And he goes on to say, and this is not GM's official answer, but what Car Connection thinks is going on, and says, hey, this is a patent application issue. If GM had laid out the cards on the table, you can bet Toyota, Honda, Ford, and others would have been hard at work getting a similar concept built before GM could patent this design, because this is unique to them. No other car works exactly like this. The patent acquisition took time, and anybody who knows anything about patents knows this. So they had to kind of keep it under wraps. So it's like, yeah, it does sound like they were selectively sharing information with us about how it works, but it's not because they were afraid to just be another hybrid.
So this Engadget story isn't wrong. In fact, it's right.
It's kind of a semantics argument, but what's going on.
The question is, yeah, whether they were lying or not is a semantic argument. Exactly. Yeah. All right. Well, good. That's interesting to know, though. And it's interesting to know how that Volt works. There's more about how the ring gears all connect and everything in the Engadget article. You can find that in our show notes at the wiki, twit.tv/TNT. Well, look at that. Is it? We have one more story.
It's not yet time.
The Malaysians, we must not forget them because they have the most friends and they can come after us.
Do they want to be our friends?
Yeah, probably.
If we friend them, will they
tend to have the most friends on social networking sites, according to a study released Sunday on discoverdigitallife.com. Japanese users are the other end of the spectrum. Very few friends. So Malaysian internet users have an average of 233 friends in their network. Brazilians, next, 231. On the other end of the scale, Japan user, an average of 29 friends.
Okay.
So like a tenth of what a Malaysian user has. Chinese users also very low with an average of 68.
You have to assume that anyone with more than, 100 friends, I mean, if you're an average person, you probably have a bunch of friends who are just internet friends, not actually real life friends.
One would think.
So
yeah.
Maybe in the Japanese culture, there's less of less comfort with having social network friends that aren't people you actually know or work with, or associate with.
Close friends.
Yeah.
Malaysians also spend the most time on social networking sites, an average of 9 hours per week. Russians are number two in time spent, 8.1 hours, and Turkish people, 7.7 hours. And it turns out that most of the high social network users are in developing nations. People that are in what are considered developed nations tend to watch more television and listen to radio, read the newspaper, whereas in growing markets, you see people using social media more, and they speculate that may be the fact that they just never built up habits in these other countries because there wasn't the access to television and other forms of entertainment that there is now because you have cell phones everywhere and it's easy to socially network.
Right. Malaysia. Leading the way.
Yeah.
We're just the old dinosaur of people.
We're the
listening to the radio.
We're not quite misanthropes, but yeah, we're kind of left behind. Ooh. All right. Hold on.
I'm lighting it.
Light that candle.
I'm going to light it.
It's time for the news views. We start with an update from the Samsung Galaxy Tab rumor mill, which has been running full tilt these days. Here are the rumors as of this moment. Sprint releases the Tab November 14th. That's a rumor. T-Mobile will sell the Tab for $399 with contract. And the latest rumor, the Tab comes to Verizon November 1st, which would make them the odds-on favorite for the first to sell the tablet.
New research indicates that lithium batteries are sensitive to heat and can ignite in flight if transported in cargo compartments of airplanes. In fact, the FAA acknowledged Friday that a UPS plane that crashed last month was carrying lithium batteries. The FAA says recent research has identified heat as the trigger of previous battery-related fires and offers advice on how to reduce the risk. I don't know, just maybe put it in the, overhead compartment.
Keep them cold.
Yeah. Don't check them.
Chill them. Keep those things on
More ice.
More
ice, please. Got a hot battery here.
Have you been making jokes playing off of Apple's slogan? There's an app for that.
I know I did earlier today.
Yep, it's a good one.
Then you better stop it right now, and I will take that advice myself. Apple has been awarded a trademark for the phrase. Granted, personal quips are not usually a violation of trademark protection laws, but Apple has almost no sense of humor about these things, so you've been warned.
That's what she said.
There's an app to warn you. So many people were buying iPhones in China in order to resell them on the street that Apple has put out a new policy to stop these so-called scalpers. Customers in China must now reserve an iPhone on Apple's website before visiting the store to complete the purchase. Frankly, that beats waiting in line anyway. And the scalpers are probably just going to be outside with laptops, like, you know, making their reservations.
Scalping.
Or whatever.
12 Best Buy stores will now have eco-totality charging stations for electric vehicles by March. Eco-totality said today that its Blink EV charging stations will be installed in Tucson, Phoenix, L.A., San Diego, and Seattle. And if those work out, they'll consider installing more charging stations in other regions. Usually how these things work. I bet you the Geek Squad car is always going to hog it, though.
Yeah, there's an app for that.
I hardly knew her.
Quit it. But how do we generate the electricity to charge all of those electric Geek Squad cars? Wind. The Department of Energy says that the wind off the coasts of 26 states in the U.S. has the potential to generate four times as much power as the nation's current capacity. It would also create 43,000 jobs. The answer, my friends, is offshore turbine installation blown in the wind.
The answer, my friends, is offshore turbine installation. All right, we're going to my favorite story. Mobile phone companies T-Mobile and Orange recently merged in the UK and last month created a fun new game to tell employees whether they had jobs or not in the merger. They took groups of 30 to 60 people, creating and out of all 16,000 employees, they divided them up into groups of 30 to 60 people. The company's now called Everything Everywhere. And those groups were shown colored lights.
Oh, what a fun game.
If you saw a blue light, it meant your job had been mapped and you were safe.
Lucky.
If you saw a green light, you were okay with some limited job possibilities.
Kind of.
A yellow light meant caution. You have to reapply for your job.
Questionable.
And a red light meant please storm out of the room weeping because you've been made redundant in the most humiliating way we could think of.
Tom, you said this was a fun game.
That's a fun
game. This is the most evil
game. It was fun for the managers.
Well, or the people who got the blue light. Woohoo! Yeah. I'm the best.
Fun little game.
My job's awesome. By the way, is it supposed to be like a traffic light? Because there aren't any blue lights.
Yeah, where the blue light go?
like, super speed.
We have four conditions. What do we do? Oh, and we almost forgot. The Irish High Court has ruled that record labels cannot force ISPs to hand over personal information.
Okay.
That will be played out in the legislature over in Ireland. But the court did leave the door open for legislation. However, the ISPs don't have to hand over information to record companies without a law being put in place.
Okay.
Finally, the story on free public Wi-Fi.
Free public Wi-Fi. I know that Wi-Fi network. It's like in every airport and
it's everywhere.
You feel like it's everywhere, actually. Yeah, exactly.
It's that network that shows up on your phone where you're like, gosh, or on your laptop where you think, maybe I'll just, hopefully someone hasn't shut down a network close to me and I can hop on and check my Gmail. And there's free public Wi-Fi. And I've connected to it, I don't know, 50 times in probably 50 different airports. And never once has it worked.
Don't connect to that.
Why?
Because that's not a real thing.
But what is it?
Well, first of all, if you look, it's an ad hoc network, which means you're connecting somebody else's laptop.
Right.
So that's the first signal.
Right.
The second thing is nobody calls free public Wi-Fi free public Wi-Fi. The insidious version of this actually uses things like T-Mobile, so it's really easy to be fooled, unless you're noticing that you're connecting to a laptop, not an actual access point. But according to an NPR story, they figured out what this is. It essentially takes advantage of a bug in Windows.
XP.
Yeah, Windows XP before SP3.
Right.
So if you connect to free public Wi-Fi, then that becomes the last connection you made. And the next time it can't connect to something, it'll start broadcasting as free public Wi-Fi.
Well, it's even worse than that, though, because what it is as a, let's say, as an XP user, if I had a list of 10 favorite networks.
Right.
If my XP machine can't see any of those, it creates a network called free public Wi-Fi.
Because you've connected to it before.
No. That's just something that it creates. If it can't find any of my favorite networks, why free public Wi-Fi has spread like wildfire.
No, I think you have to have connected to free public Wi-Fi once for that to work, right?
I don't think so. I think that more than a few of us have generated it, and that's why it's everywhere. It has permeated our very essence.
You lure other people into connecting,
yes.
essentially, and then it starts to propagate.
It's vaporware.
It's not
vapor
real.
It's work.
But it does open you up as an ad hoc network, which can allow hackers a little wedge into your machine.
Yes.
So the folks out there looking to pwn some laptops, this is why I wish Darren were here today.
Yeah.
Instead of recovering at home. Get well soon, Darren.
Please do.
It's a great way to break into a laptop.
So there's a couple things to learn from this NPR story, everyone. First, delete free public Wi-Fi from any network list that it may be on of yours, because it will never give you public Wi-Fi and it might do a lot worse. And if you're an XP user, why don't you think about upgrading to Service Pack 3?
Yeah.
And saving us all the
And
headache.
Don't log on to free public Wi-Fi.
No.
Because you're just making it worse.
Yeah.
On to the calendar.
Nokia. Heard of it?
A couple of times. They make boots, right?
Yeah, they make some...
snakeskin.
Yeah, really nice snakeskin boots. But they're also shipping C7, which is Nokia's second Symbian 3 phone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Finally.
So if you've already got enough boots, then maybe you'd be interested in this nice Symbian 3 phone.
Right.
Jailbreak iOS 4.1 day, iPhone 3GS and 4 and iPad and iPod 4G are all part of the deal. How do you say this?
You say
name?
Lime Rain.
Lime Rain, even though it's with a one. It's very elite.
So the second I is
It's
a
Lime
one.
Rain, not Green Poison.
Yeah, because the guy who made Lime Rain wasn't going to make it. He was all huffy, but then he came out with it. So the folks making Green Poison said, well, we're not going to release ours because we want to see what Apple does in response to Lime Rain. We don't want to tip our hand. So, but you can. You can jailbreak with Lime Rain now.
Lime Rain. The leet way. Sony's Google TV event is tomorrow. That's October 12th, Tuesday.
Should be interesting to see what kind of, I don't know, remotes come out of that announcement.
Yeah, we've already seen
huge.
We've already seen the mega mote.
I need a new coffee table. So
exactly.
It's a remote. It's a coffee table. It's a stepladder.
It's shelter.
It's a port in a storm.
Yeah.
So hopefully they'll have some other stuff to look at. And then Medal of Honor also launches tomorrow, mm-hmm. or Tuesday, if you're listening to this later in the week, as Opposing Force. That's the the formerly called the Taliban as your enemy.
No, it's Opposing Force.
Okay.
Don't call it that.
The artist formerly known as...
as Taliban.
As Taliban.
The opponent formerly known as Taliban is now Opposing Force. So that's tomorrow as well.
On to the voicemails. First one is a video that comes to us from the rural areas.
Hey, Twit crew. This is Tim, the rural carrier in Wisconsin. And that's rural route. Or is it route? Anyway... Tom, I need to know exactly what the date was on your Flynn's shirt there. Is that a current Tron shirt, a previous Tron shirt, or a Tron shirt at all? Also, I believe I'll probably be switching to Dish Network from DirecTV because the Google TV deal. I look forward to sending you more strange videos in the future. Thank you. Bye. I don't know how to stop it.
You mean the car?
Darn Google. Oh, Android. Huh?
You know, I know that wasn't a Google car because if it was, he would have come to a complete stop.
Yeah, the Google car would have just...
He rolled right through that sign.
I don't like to usually play video voicemails that are sent to us from a car, but because he was obviously had it in a holder
was
that
mounted,
was facing
yeah.
out, he wasn't holding it.
He was being safe.
He wasn't looking at it. Hopefully, we couldn't tell. I don't know.
That was from Wisconsin?
Was he from Wisconsin?
Is that what he said?
I don't know. It looked very
Wisconsin-ish.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Yeah,
cornfields,
yeah, yeah.
Open road.
To answer his question, the Flynn's arcade shirt that I was wearing was from Comic-Con 2 years ago.
So it
New-ish.
Refers to the,
yeah.
the franchise that is continuing.
Correct.
Yes.
Our voicemail, which is just a voicemail, asks about an issue. Well, not that that's bad.
Won't make your
just,
lunch.
Just a voicemail.
It isn't also a house that you live in.
not like the Sony remote. It talks about an issue streaming Netflix on the new Apple TV.
Tom, this is Chris in Texas. I've got a brand new Apple TV, and here recently, on the Friday, Saturday, and today is Sunday the 10th, I can no longer access Netflix. It will not play. I've gone through the Apple forums and have seen that a number of users are having the same problem. They've contacted, and I've contacted Netflix and Apple support. Both of them push me to the other, telling me that they don't support it. Hopefully that you're not having this problem, but I thought it would be worthwhile letting other people know about it. Shouldn't the news fuse be the news bomb? Maybe the news fuse bomb? I don't know. I'm just saying.
Doesn't roll.
Thanks for the show.
Well, it starts as a fuse, yes, and it ends as a bomb.
A blast of
our
news.
Last story is always a bomb. Anyway, anyways, that's interesting. I don't have the new Apple TV, so I haven't encountered this problem. Do you?
I have it as of a couple days ago, but I haven't actually streamed anything Netflixy over it. But then again, I also have a Roku box, and my television itself is Netflix enabled, the Sony Bravia. So it's like I don't even know if I'm going to need to stream Netflix through my Apple TV anytime soon.
Well,
too many boxes.
We aren't really the help and how to show, so I can't give you much more help from that. But although, Jason, you found a forum thread.
Yeah, I did a search, and yeah, I actually just played a little bit of it during the voicemail. But it does appear that there are quite a few people experiencing this issue. So I'd be curious if any listeners have experienced this as well.
All right. On to the emails, to TNT@twit.tv. Vance wrote in and said, when speaking about the new Amazon Android marketplace over the last couple of weeks, you guys seem to be missing the most important point. It's not a matter of replacing or duplicating an existing Android marketplace on the phone, but creating one that does not yet exist on the web. It's dramatically easier to browse and investigate apps on the web than on the phone. And other than third-party sites like AppBrain, this is simply missing for Android. And with the Google sign-in, all the syncing could be over the air. While I would love for Google to develop an iTunes-like experience on the web for complete browsing, purchasing, and app and music management, this Amazon Android market could be a huge step forward.
Yeah, that's true. There really isn't a web interface for the Google market. You know, it's interesting, actually. I just saw an article this morning that alluded to Best Buy possibly opening up their own Android store as well. So there could be a lot of competing stores, Verizon, Android, Best Buy, all kind of offering a different way of searching, navigating these things. But yeah, the web aspect is missing. It makes it so much easier to research your apps. But you were saying in prep, Sarah, that like, actually getting those apps to install might not be that easy from the web, depending on if they do OTA push or
it
what.
It could be another step, depending on, I don't know.
If they did it so that you buy the app on the web and then it over-the-air syncs.
That would be great.
Or maybe it sends a text message to you or something like that if they had to go around a roundabout way. Let's see here. We have...
Albert, actually. From North Carolina.
Yes. Albert from North Carolina writes in and says, hey, TNT crew, I'm writing about the young man who was being tracked by the FBI. It immediately occurred to me when I saw the pic of the device that this must be a decoy. They put the only clunky one for him to find. He finds it, removes it. The feds come to get it. He thinks everything is okay. Little does he know, they put one of their real trackers in his engine bay. Okay, maybe I've been watching too much X-Files.
You've been watching too much X-Files. Or have you?
Or has he?
Trying to lure the guy into a false sense of security, so he makes a mistake.
He goes, hey, FBI, way to go, old big clunky model. I got my oil changed.
That's exactly what happened.
Little does he know that that probably didn't happen.
You never know.
Maybe it did.
They said he was
they're
boring.
Sneaky
they're
sneaky for
luring,
a living.
Exactly. That's what they're paid
That's
for.
That's what they do.
They lure you. They do a lot of luring.
They're lurers.
They are lurers.
Okay, next email from Dan in Duluth. He addresses this just to Tom, so I'll address it to you as well.
Thank you.
Tom, in reference to your discussion on video devices yesterday, I curled up in bed last night to watch the latest Caprica episode and fired up the Hulu Plus app on my iPad. What's this? This is odd. Caprica's not on the list of shows. Okay, so I started up Safari window, went to Hulu.com. There was Caprica in the feature list. Then I tried to start the stream, received a message that I couldn't watch Caprica on my iPod, booted up my netbook, and was able to watch the program as normal with no issue. If the world of free over-the-internet streaming is going to be segmented by the devices we own, not only are we going to need an app to remember which show we can watch on which device, but as our pile of high-tech clutters, our living rooms, we will long for the days where we could just pay a cable company $200 and sit and watch some TV.
Yeah, I agree. This is a pain in the ass.
I was kind of complaining about it. It's like I have a lot of little devices in order to watch stuff.
Yeah,
and it's great because you have options, but at the same time, it does clutter up things and it is confusing. And what does what? And it's a great little conundrum that Dan has.
It's going to take a lot of licensing changes for this to change. That's what's causing all this, because you get a license to run it. in a certain situation. And then if you're like, oh, but I'm also going to run it on phones, everyone's like, well, hold on. You didn't negotiate for the rights to run it on phones.
Yeah.
So now we got to go and hope. So that whole system has got to change eventually.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for watching. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can give us an email, TNT@twit.tv, or give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll see you tomorrow.